Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. In today's episode, we're diving deep into some of the most challenging questions about charity and its role in society. Is charity truly the solution to poverty, or does it sometimes only address the symptoms while leaving the root causes untouched? We'll explore how the warm glow of giving can distract from tackling deeper structural issues and discuss the impact of celebrity-led campaigns like Band-Aid and the media portrayals of global crises. Joining me today is Dr. Colin Alexander, a senior lecturer in political communications at Nottingham Trent University. His research spans diverse topics, and today's discussion will be about charity's societal role.
Colin, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
So can we just start off with telling us a bit about what's the common belief about charity that you think needs to be rethought and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd say that the most important common misconception of charity is that it's all, inverted commas, good cause. I think the most important takeaway point here is that some of it is better than others, and that there is a criteria through which we can evaluate how good a cause is. And also we should note that sometimes there is an element of maliciousness within the charity industries. And by that I mean that there are people who are deliberately unhelpful, but who may appear kind of pious in some way in their public communications. And that is a real problem. And I think that we tend to think of the charity industries as being quite a kind of holy ground, but ultimately they have problems just as any other industry has as well.
So do you think that charity is often seen as a solution to poverty, even though it may only sort of treat the symptoms and not really get into the real cause?
This is the kind of key debate about charity. And I should start off by saying that the sort of reduction of poverty is, that's just one charitable purpose. And there's if you look at charity law, there's a list of, depending on the country that you're in, maybe between about 10 and 15 charitable purposes. And poverty reduction is only one of those. But most people tend to associate it with, contributing to the alleviation of a societal or an environmental problem as such. And that creates an expectation that in some way that the charity is being thoughtful in what it does. However, as you're right to point out, we can certainly label a number of organisations as being highly questionable in terms of their strategy. So if you want, we can take a single issue and we can maybe explore it through that case study. So let's take something like homelessness, where you can go out into Nottingham city centre or any other city in the Western world, almost, you can see people who are what we would call destitute in some way. And in the evenings, you might see charitable organisations on the streets, and they're giving people food or blankets or something, which on the face of it is really well-meaning. And we're not going to really doubt that there is a genuine attempt to care there. The bigger question, however, is the extent to which that actually helps the issue of homelessness. And in terms of, if we want there to be a reduction or indeed an end in homelessness, is that action actually going to help that? And that's a really uncomfortable question, because you're often potentially criticising people who are really quite well-meaning people in society. And my feeling towards this is that just because somebody is well-meaning does not necessarily mean that they are not misguided in what they are doing. So in order to alleviate homelessness, i.e. so that we do not have this terrible situation on our streets, that often requires legislative change, and it often requires the lobbying of Parliament, the lobbying of local authorities, in order to ensure that people have what they are entitled to. So in modern society, in a wealthy country like ours, local authorities can decide what they spend the money on, what they don't, and what they don't spend the money on. And ultimately, homelessness is not necessarily the root cause of homelessness is around the welfare system and around housing entitlement and those basic sort of human security issues. So if we had a system where everybody in that society is entitled to some form of roof over their head, that comes through legislative change. The issue being that if we have an army of people on the streets in the evening, and I say an army because the Salvation Army does quite a lot of this, if we have an army of people on the streets in the evening, then the reality of the political system that we live in means that the council or the local authority or even the national parliament will say, well, this issue now declines in priority to fix. And if people are doing, you know, all this good work or well-intended work, then we're actually not going to fix it. So the really uncomfortable debate that we have now is that whether all these nice people doing this actually furthers the problem, or it does not lead to the solution to the problem. And unfortunately, as I've said a couple of times now, look, that's a really uncomfortable question to ask, because ultimately we can acknowledge the work that these people do, because what we see is the development of a collective moral consciousness within society, which is really important, but it still can be misguided. And I think people tend to shy away from questions like this. And my research is trying to at least open up a forum of debate around them.
Celebrity-driven campaigns, like Band-Aid, they're really powerful tools for raising money and funds. But do they then risk oversimplifying these like complex issues?
Well, if we look at the academic definition of celebrity, it's somebody who is essentially self-interested. They are somebody who pursues fame for the sake of fame and the financial wealth that comes with fame. And therefore, they're not necessarily famous for a skill or a talent, but they're famous because they want to be famous. And they receive the external validation that they crave from being known to millions of people. So by that definition, it corresponds that celebrities are 99% of the time engaging in charitable activity to further their own careers and to sort of keep their stars shining brightly. The issue with celebrities is, as you say, it's quite reductionist and it oversimplifies issues. But there is also an issue around, as I was saying before, around intent and ego of the donor. So if a donor engages with a charitable organisation because their favourite celebrity is endorsing it or advocating for that cause, then that donor is only there because of the celebrity. They don't have necessarily an emotional or indeed a compassionate affiliation to that cause, i.e. if the celebrity goes away, so does the donor. So on the one hand, many charities pursue this route. However, it actually requires quite a lot of work in order to do this, and quite a lot of financial investment to do it as well. Not necessarily because they're paying celebrities, although some do pay celebrities to advocate for their cause. However, if you have gone down that route in trying to attract fundraising and trying to attract donors, that requires a lot of work and effort to keep those people, the attention of those people on the cause. Whereas actually, if you attract people based upon kindness and their compassion and ask them to really invest into the importance of this cause, nothing to do with sleep, because they truly believe that this is an important societal or environmental issue, then the chances are you've got them for years and they'll continue to donate to you because they'll continue to see the importance of your work. The problem with the celebrity industries is that, you know, celebrities are here today, gone tomorrow. And quite often their stars shine brightly for a while and quite catastrophically collapse when there is some sort of questionable behaviour which occurs. So it's a really risky strategy for charities to pursue.
And do those celebrity kind of endorsements of charities and so forth, do they change the way that, like, kind of societal and globally we see charity or the problems that are happening in certain areas?
Yeah, they change it in several ways. The first thing is that celebrities are quite picky on the sorts of causes that they promote. So celebrities are sort of falling over themselves to get involved with kids' charities. You know, there's the sort of concept of the innocence of the child means that they're not particularly controversial charities. You know, a kids' cancer charity, you can't really knock it, okay? Whereas any charity which perhaps does something which is politically controversial, for example, or does something where public sentiment towards it has an element of critique or is rather varied, anything like that, a celebrity, these organisations have reported that they cannot get a celebrity for love nor money unless that celebrity has a particular personal motivation to do it. So, for example, maybe the celebrity has a family member which suffers from a rare genetic disorder, for example, or you've seen celebrities, for example, advocating for domestic violence charities because they've been victims of domestic violence themselves. So in that instance, they may well profit from it. The charity industries may well profit from it. But lo and behold, the majority of celebrities are sort of camped into maybe one or two sectors of this industry. The problem then is that creates a distortion in society as to what we think are the most important causes, because the media tends to be attracted to organisations where there is a sort of celebrity advocate.
So picking up on the media element then and the media portrayal, like media portrayal, say a global crisis can drive like charitable actions, but do they sometimes like kind of really reduce the complex issues to oversimplify kind of the narratives of them?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I've recently been doing quite a lot of work around the kind of Band-Aid 40th anniversary. So, and that's a real case in point here, where if you look at what Band-Aid did in November, December 1984, they released a pop song which was highly emotionally effective upon the public. And then they subsequently did the Live Aid concerts in July 1985. The issue here is that Band-Aid was attempting to improve the lives, and I think that Bob Geldof and Majeur were well-intentioned here. This is a good example of this. Essentially, they saw an issue of mass destitution in Ethiopia and wanted to help. The issue that we have with Band-Aid is that famine, which was the main cause here. Famine is actually a crime against humanity. It's not caused by the rains failing, and that's one of the main misconceptions that we have. Famines are political events where the people who live and the people who die, they do so largely dependent on their entitlement to food. So if you look at things like the Ukraine famine of the 1930s, you look at the Irish famine of the 1840s, these were people who died surrounded by food. They just weren't entitled to it within the political system. So the way in which we, similar to my point on homelessness here, if we want to improve the situation and prevent famines from happening, then we have to have improved global legislation, and that comes through improved international criminal law, which makes famine or the incitement of famine commensurate with something like ethnic cleansing or genocide, which is essentially often what it is, not necessarily intentionally, but by neglect of one's political duty. raising money for a famine through charitable donations is a bit like homelessness, going to make the likelihood of that essential legislation less likely. It's not going to facilitate it because it reduces the political will towards making that a reality, and also it skews public awareness and public consciousness that famine is indeed a crime in the first place. We've also seen issues around Band-Aid in terms of the representation of Africa and Africans as being kind of wholly destitute, which is not the case, when actually a lot of the situation, Africa is a very fertile continent, and actually a lot of the food is grown to feed us rather than them, which is, we are part of the problem here. And the final thing is has been around Geldof's claim that it's just a pop song, and therefore the accuracy of the lyrics don't matter. And my argument has been that this is far from a pop song or just a pop song. This is a charity asset, and it's the key fundraising communication for a charitable organisation. The importance of this being that if you look at the charity sector as a whole, if they all took Geldof's approach of just saying the accuracy of what we say in our fundraising communications doesn't matter, we would have an existential crisis for the industry.
Colin, thank you for sharing so much today with us and our listeners. It's obviously a very large area and we're scraping the surface of what you could talk about. Just finally, though, what would the one key takeaway you hope our listeners would remember and act upon when it comes to the role of charity in society?
Be consistent. In England and Wales, there's 164,000 charities, okay, big and small. £1 billion organisations, £10,000 organisations. Okay, be consistent. You cannot back every single cause. Okay, you've got to pick your battles, but you can do that through research, and then be consistent with it. Because the one thing that charities need is consistent income flows that they can then predict, plan, make long-term strategies, and also try to engage in what the industry calls unrestricted funding. So give them the money and trust them. Trust that they will do a good job. What we often see with large donors is that it comes with lots of strings attached. And the strings are usually something to do with the priority of the donor and how they see the world and what their priorities are in the world. So whether you're a big donor or a small donor, give the money to the charity, assuming that you've done your research, walk away. Allow them the freedom to do their work, because some of what they do is maybe quite unattractive and some of what they do is quite difficult as well. So it might well be that they want to go and lobby politicians. They want to try and change the law. And that might cost them £50,000 to do that. And at the end of it, there's no guarantee of success. And this is one of the things people get a bit anxious about, that because they want to see the kind of bang for their buck right on. You know, I want all of my money to go towards helping, you know, foster children or whatever the cause may be. But actually, to actually change something is really difficult. And you've got to try and influence people who are quite stubborn. And that's a really difficult thing to do. So allow them the space to do that.
If you'd like to find out more about Colin's work, please have a look in the episode description.
You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.